Blog Talk Radio. From the blast of the cruise missile to the battle of the final four, while NMSU licks its wounds and waits for next year, while broadcasting from a flimsy, multicolored, asbestos-filled, yet cozy, single-wide trailer. Kelly O'Connell here, 606. Good morning to you. Well, I guess we didn't make it, did we? We did not make it, but we did pretty well this year. Nothing to be ashamed of. And one of the top 64 teams. So there's always next year. I will give you an update as to what's happening now in the bracket, but it's getting down to the last 32-16, that area, you know. So we've got, I had to, actually Mark D'Antonio told me that he was going to be coming on today. And he's missed the last couple of appointments here. Maybe he's under a lot of stress. I don't know. But I just got a text from him that he was on vacation. So I'm sure that just kind of a little mistake there. And all right. So these... And I got this really strange email from somebody that I know who said that they were going to try to do a recall on D'Antonio based on Daniel Salinas, which I didn't really even know the details of, but, you know, that's Sunland Park, and I guess the way that was handled. So, what can you say? But anyway, so Mark's always welcome to come on and such. But anybody who's got a beef with Mark, you know, this is an equal opportunity studio. If you've got something local that's going on, then controversial or not, please, you know, give us a call. I am going to try to pick up the slack from my friend Keith there. And I realize that there's probably a little gap in the coverage from a little more to the left side, but and obviously I'm not going to do it exactly the same way, but as he would, but he's anybody who would have been a natural for his show is welcome to call up and book a show. By the way, my ducks, they got plucked. So they're out. Here's a little bit from ESPN. Today, by the way, is 3/23/2015. And it is a little bit chilly outside, not too bad. And let's kind of update this weather here. 49 degrees right now, so like I say, not too bad. Here is about the NCAA men's basketball bracket. They got rid of the billion-dollar bracket. I think there was a dispute between Yahoo and somebody, and so they couldn't do Warren Buffett's thing. But here goes this one.
We are sweet on the 16 schools still alive for the men's college basketball championship.
We are, and we had a good game today. Wichita State has tried for years to schedule a game against Kansas. It took the NCAA tournament to put them together, their first matchup since 1993. And the Shockers were like, well, let's get going. 7-seed Wichita State, 2-seed Kansas. Pick it up in the second half to Kale Cotton with the steal, takes it for the lay-in. Season 9, 19-34-28, Shockers. Later, Fred Van Vliet to Evan Wessel. He did that all day. 37-30 Shockers. Ron Baker. So he did it all day. Wessel in the corner. He had 4 threes. Then Darius Carter going to find Cotton. He got a three in his arsenal himself. 49-36 Shockers. Wichita State. 78. Kansas. 65. It is for Kansas the fifth time since 2005 they lose as a top four seed prior to the Sweet 16. Wichita State, second time in 3 years to reach the Sweet 16. They're going to face Notre Dame.
And I don't know, did you do a bracket? I got a clip from Mr. Madman himself, Charlie Sheen, on this whole thing. But I mean, let me go to this this bracket that we've got right here, and I'll let you know what I see. But, yeah, Charlie Sheen is not too happy with the president, and I'll play that clip for you in just a minute. Okay, so I've got Kentucky and Cincinnati played. Cincinnati won that one, or actually, no, they haven't played that one yet. Yes, they have. Kentucky won that, and they're number one Kentucky versus number five WVU. West Virginia beat Maryland. Butler versus Notre Dame, 6 Butler, 3 Notre Dame. Notre Dame wins 67-64. Wichita State against Kansas, Wichita 78, Kansas 65. So that's number 3, Indiana Notre Dame versus Wichita. And Wisconsin-Oregon, Wisconsin won that 72-65. And then Arkansas versus North Carolina, 87 North Carolina over Arkansas, 78. So number one, Wisconsin versus 4 UNC. Xavier beats Georgia State, 75-67. Arizona beats Ohio State, 73-58. And so number two, Arizona against number 6, Xavier. That's on the left side of the bracket. On the right side of the bracket, Villanova versus North Carolina State. And State wins that 71-68, pretty close there. Louisville 66, Northern Iowa 53. So that's number 8, North Carolina State versus number 4, Louisville. Oklahoma 72 over Dayton 66, and Michigan State 60 over Virginia 54. And so that's number three, Oklahoma versus number seven, MSU, Michigan State. Number one, Duke, 68 over number eight, San Diego State, 68-49. That was a blowout. And then Utah, 75, Georgetown, 64. So it's number one, Duke versus number five, Utah. And then UCLA beat UAB, 92-75. Iowa, 68, Gonzaga, 87. So that's UCLA, number 11. Versus number two Gonzaga. So that's your 16. So anyway, it seems like it's been a pretty close one this year. And I do have this little clip from Charlie Sheen that I thought was entertaining. And also I love that his sense of frustration and anger and, gosh, I've got to find this for you. Well, I'll just see if I think what I'll do is just see if I can. I've got it on my list of stories here, but I got so many stories that a little too hard to pick through here. So, all right. So it is 6:15. I tell you what, let's take a little break. I'm doing the history of country music artist by artist. Of course, I can't do everybody. But I'm getting into here the outlaw years. One of the most important, one of the most important albums in the history of country music is the Outlaws album, and it had Willie Nelson, it had Waylon Jennings, and. I'm just trying to bring it up here. It was an amazing album called Wanted the Outlaws. It was kind of the shot across the bow that the power and the influence of Nashville was kind of
broken a little bit. Do you know how hard it is to find a perfect anniversary gift? So hard.
It was transferred over to...
This year, though, I have an idea. She always says she loves the little things in our
Austin,
relationship.
Texas.
So instead of one big
gift, anyway,
I got her a lot of little things.
Something
from that organic
the
market.
Album was a huge success,
that
launched
before I knew it,
this outlaw
like
movement.
Money on
and
my
it was
Amex
kind of an amazing situation with Willie Nelson had left Nashville because his house had burned down, and there were a lot
of
people that he was taking care of.
He got his two tickets to that
and
new musical.
Wow.
I know, right?
You know,
I
he had this,
honey.
I guess, kind of a retinue or whatever, but these people that were kind of around him, the important ones moved there to over to Austin. But anyway, here we go. I'm trying to multitask here, which I absolutely stink at. Here's coming in for you. I do have this for you here, but let me. I've got Luckenbach, Texas.
Insurance was born online.
Songs. And so this is a great time. I've seen pictures of Luckenbach, Texas. It looks like about three people live there. Anyway, Kelly O'Connell, 617 and 523-1450 to call in. And it's the 23rd of the third month, March. Here it is, Luckenbach, Texas.
The only two things in life that make it worth living is guitars tuned good and firm, feeling women. I don't need my name in the marquee lights. I got my song, got you with me tonight. Maybe it's time we got back to the basics of love. Let's go to Luckenbach, Texas. Waylon and Willie and the boys. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs and Newberry's train songs and blue eyes crying in the rain. Out in Luckenbach, Texas,
nobody feeling no pain.
Good morning, it's Kelly, and I hope you're doing well. It is 6:22. It's about 50 degrees outside, and it was real nice yesterday. If you were out there, I'm sure you went out for at least a little bit, huh? Now, Ted Cruz has announced that he's in the race, so I'll have that for you in just a minute. I do have a little clip here from Charlie Sheen that is a little bit off the hook. And I'm looking into this article also that there was an impact of Obama on the Israeli race there.
Our country.
Also, we've got a report. Clinton emailed aides private accounts about Benghazi. Of course, she was using her own private account. So whether we can get the emails that would have something to do with Benghazi would probably be related to.
We believe that allowing exports could support jobs and economic growth here at home while helping to meet global energy demand. That's the power of energy. Come see how we're putting power in cooperation.
Emails from her own server that was in her own house. So that would be like having Yahoo in your own house. That would be. Having the servers to that in your own house. All right, so here is Charlie Sheen and his reaction to the president's bracket for the NCAAs.
What did you think about Obama's bracket?
I responded today in a tweet that tells the whole story.
Okay, but do you think the picks were okay?
I don't care about the picks. I care about wasting that kind of time.
Gotcha.
When the world is what it's in the state it's in right now, and it just makes me insane.
Yeah, okay.
It's not cool. It's not cool. It's not fair to the families and to who we are as a republic. It's not fair. And we deserve better from our president. And I demand it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
That's all. That's all I'm saying.
What did you think about John Cryer's memoirs now? He came out with some memoirs about...
Awesome.
Pretty good?
Awesome. I love it.
So anyway, that's I thought it was kind of interesting, isn't it? I'm trying to remember who Charlie Sheen reminds me of. There's this guy, and I think I told you guys about this person. I was reading this book a long time ago, maybe a year or something ago. I'll have to get back into the book and bring the facts on the show. But it was a book about the history of basically kind of like civil rights or liberty, whatever comes out of England, and some of the people that were involved in that were actually fairly progressive, not progressive in how we would define it, but they were libertines or whatever, gamblers, rakes, people that were dissipative, and yet they were still involved in some of the stuff. I'll bring that on, but it's kind of interesting. I mean, you just think of this guy, Charlie Sheen, is just kind of a drug-addled nutcase, but he's actually pretty good friends with Alex Jones. All right, Ted Cruz announcing that he's going to be running. What do you think about that? 5-2-3-14-50. Do you take Ted Cruz seriously as a candidate? Do you think he's electable? What kind of a leader would he be? Or is he too far on the fringe? Check this out. And this is from the Associated Press.
Texas Republican Ted Cruz intends on launching his presidential campaign on Monday. A strategist for the first-term senator confirmed his plans to jump into the race. He spoke to the Associated Press on condition of anonymity so as not to preclude the formal announcement. Details about Cruz's Monday campaign launch were first reported by the Houston Chronicle. Once Cruz makes his announcement, he will be the first high-profile Republican to officially enter the 2016 presidential contest.
Washington wants Obamacare. The people want liberty.
The 44-year-old has considerable appeal among the GOP's base of conservative voters. He's won praise from Tea Party activists for his stance against the Affordable Care Act. Padmanandarama, the Associated Press.
All right, so... one of the things that I was reading over the weekend is that the dream, the dream candidates for the left would be Hillary Clinton versus Jeb Bush, and Hillary would beat Jeb because they're both progressives, or they're both liberals. That Jeb Bush is kind of a Rockefeller liberal, and everybody knows what Hillary is, and that it would depress the base, and so the base wouldn't be as enthusiastic about Jeb. And so here is this article in Politico magazine that I wanted to bring your attention to. It's really kind of extraordinary. It's called Jeb's Talk Radio Program, and I'm going to come back and talk to you about that in just a minute, but I thought it was notable the way it's being framed. And I think the number one candidate for the right now is Walker, and although Walker can lose his momentum, I think that there is going to have to be somebody in the race after losing two elections in a row to moderate Republicans against the Democratic candidates. You're going to have to bring in somebody who's a little more conservative, or, you know, sell the party, put it up for sale or something. I mean, there's no way that the GOP can continue on with the mistakes that it's made and try to be a national party anymore. And so the issues that are really troubling the Republican Party are that it's got too much, according to a lot of analysts, too much liberalism or too much moderation in the party to appeal to the base. And so it doesn't matter who gets put up as the head of the party. The people who are kind of dyed in the wool conservatives don't see that person as answering the fundamental problems of the country and so forth. Therefore, they're not excited. Here is Waylon Jennings, a little more, Willie Nelson, Luckenbach, Texas. Kelly O'Connell Show 629. We'll be right back.
So baby, let's sell your diamond ring, buy some boots and faded jeans and go away. This coat and tie is choking me. In your high society, you cry all day.
It's Kelly here, and I'm looking at I've got a few clips for you so that you can kind of get a feel for where the right is coming on this issue of Jeb Bush. Are you a fan of Jeb Bush? 523-1450. I was a fan of him when I lived in his state, but you know, you think that Cruces has problems and El Paso and everything, that's nothing compared to Miami. I mean, any problem that you see out here that you shake your head at, it could be illegals. It could be a lack of, business vitality. It could be anything, problems with construction. It could be vested interests fighting back against whoever. I mean, there's Florida is a very populous state, but being down in Miami is like, you know, it's like being in a third world country so much more. When you go down to El Paso, like any other border town, you get a sense that you're not quite in America, but I mean, you're not anywhere else, you know, but it's a little bit different. It feels different down there. I know a lot of people here don't like El Paso, but I think it's kind of an interesting city. But when you get to Miami, you really often feel like you're not in America whatsoever. You go into neighborhoods where they don't speak English whatsoever, down to Hialeah, the Cuban center, where, you know, you could just as easily run into somebody who doesn't speak English as does. I would say probably 75% of the people in Hialeah don't speak English, 50%, something like that. So when I was in the state, it seemed like Jeb was doing a pretty good job, but you know, I always kind of wondered, like, it didn't seem like they ever spent any time trying to find out who was legal or who wasn't legal, which I guess is a federal issue. But you know, there's a lot of people in Miami that are not legal. And to me, that's a problem because a couple of things. It's like, how do these people get protection, you know, from the for police or whatever, if they're afraid to call the authorities because they think that they might be sent back? So that puts them at a disadvantage. And also, they're not, you know, completely in the system in terms of Social Security, paying taxes, getting benefits. And so it's there's just kind of a surreal feeling down there sometimes. And so I always wondered why Jeb Bush didn't do more to, I don't know, what he could have done. There are so many people from Haiti that are illegal. There's so many people from, I mean, if you're Cuban, there's the wet foot, dry foot policy where if you touch the ground, if you come in off a boat and touch the ground, you're on your way to citizenship. So that's a little bit different. Anyway, so I don't know how conservative he is. He didn't seem like a, you know, super strong conservative, but he didn't, you know, he didn't seem super liberal. I guess that's it. And that's what people are complaining about. He's middle of the road. Play just a few things here. But anyway, this is just to support the point that Jeb Bush has a talk radio problem. Rush Limbaugh, he's not a conservative. The ideal ticket for 2016 election, Hillary Clinton versus Jeb Bush. All right, so here's a little bit from that clip just to kind of fill you in on where the right is coming from. 523-1450, if you have a reaction to this, you think he'd be a good candidate or not, and why? But here's Rush.
Now, we've also heard, ladies and gentlemen, that one of the problems of the Republican Party is that they refuse to cooperate. We hear over and over the Republican Party needs to engage in bipartisanship. This is needed to secure the independent vote. The independents don't like criticism and fighting, and particularly criticism of Democrat presidents or candidates. And so the Republicans, we've been told this by Senators McCain and you name it. We've been told we must tone down this criticism of Obama. We must cross the aisle. We must show the American people we can work together in Washington and get things done. We have too long, we are told, had a divided government, and we must come together and show that we can govern together.
We do have a call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly Connell Show. Who's this?
Kelly, this is Bill.
Hey, Bill, what's going on?
Hey, I think it's a foregone conclusion that Hillary's going to be the Democratic nominee. And I think the Republicans need to put somebody up against her that has a chance. And in my opinion, I think that's Condoleezza Rice.
Are you serious?
Yep.
She's not even in the running.
I know. It's time for the Republicans to push her and get her in the running.
What does Condoleezza Rice represent, in your opinion?
Well, first of all, I think she's a very intelligent lady. And, again, I think she's the only one that stands a chance against Hillary. Let's face it, the voting population, the majority of Democrats, they voted for Obama because they wanted a black president. They're going to vote for Hillary because they want to have the first woman president. And the only one that stands a chance is Rice.
Well, the San Francisco treat, Rice-A-Roni, I've heard and I've read this in a couple of different places that she's gay and she's owns a house with a woman, et cetera, et cetera. If that was true, do you think that would affect your analysis?
I think that would help her.
Yeah, probably. All right. How about this? You've obviously thought about this deeply. You're thinking about bringing people in. They're not even trying to get in the game. What about Scott Walker?
Probably not too much anti-union. I think I think the Democrats will try to dig up something on him, and I think unfortunately, like any candidate, they're going to find something.
Well, I mean, you can find something on anybody, but I mean, the fact of the matter is he went against the unions, and that's part of his legacy. I mean, that's part of his legend, is here's this guy in a fairly union state, fairly liberal state, who's not afraid to stand up to these vested interests, and he wins time and time again. I read an article about him, and they said there's only one thing that you need to know about Scott Walker. He wins. And this was written by a liberal. I was like, you know what? You can't debate that. I mean, the guy comes up in tough situations. He comes out on top. Anybody else?
I agree, except that's one state.
Yeah, true. But it's a very liberal state, and it represents, in some sense, kind of the center of the country. It's in the center of the country, number one. And number two, if he can do it there, why not somewhere else?
I would somewhat disagree with you in the fact that Wisconsin's a liberal state.
Okay.
I would say it's a democratic state.
Okay, fair enough.
Not necessarily a far-left liberal state like California or Colorado.
Yeah, so okay, I accept that. But let me ask you this. Hillary seems to have been damaged by these emails. She's not going to pull them out of her pocket if she deleted half of them. People are, you know, they're upset with her at some basic level of, you know, honesty and forthrightness and everything. Isn't it possible that somebody else will emerge from the left side?
No. Hillary will, you know, first of all, the voting population has a short memory. And by the time we get to the election, this will all have been forgotten, and Hillary's team will spin it, and it'll disappear.
All right. Okay. Who do you see as being the candidate for the Republicans?
I mean, who do I think will end up being the candidate?
With the nomination.
Unfortunately, it'll either be Bush, which I think the country's, you know, had enough Bushes. Whether, you know, I'm not even going to go into whether I like them or not. I think you got to think of the country as a whole and the mentality of the voters. Unfortunately, I think that Obamacare comment that guy made a while back about, you know, how dumb the voters are. Unfortunately, a good percent of them are. They vote with their heart or uninformed and misinformed, and that's why we're in the shape we're in today.
Yeah, so it's not getting any better out there in terms of information.
No, it's the Democrats and the far lefties are very good at spinning things and always making the Republican Party look like the bad guys. But when you get statistics and look at who did what for who, I mean, it's obvious.
Yeah.
And it's a shame.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so who do you predict is going to win the presidential race right now?
You mean for the Republican Party?
The race, the whole thing.
The whole thing? If with the who we believe is going to be candidates right now, unfortunately, Hillary.
Holy cow, where's the Pepto?
Yeah, no kidding.
All right, Bill, anything else?
No, one other thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
I've lived here for 8 months now, and, you know, the food here stinks.
Have you tried the Mexican food here?
Is there anything else?
No, but I mean, you know, somebody came up to me and said, I'm thinking about opening a Mexican restaurant. I said, there's a novel idea.
How about let's get some variety in here? You know, they opened up that soul food restaurant, and I went over there and tried a few things, and I told the owner, hey, change is good.
And what did he say?
It's a she. She appreciated it. I said, you know, we need something more around here than just Mexican.
Where is that place, by the way? I haven't been there.
It's on Solano. I'm trying to think now. I think it's north of Loman.
All right. I'll have to check that out. Sounds pretty tasty.
It's called Mrs. AJ's Soul Food Kitchen.
Whoa, I'm going to have to get over there.
Yeah, not bad if you like I said, you know, they've got some regular American fare.
Right.
Liver and onions.
That sounds good. That sounds tasty. Thanks a lot, Bill. Have a great day.
Okay, you too.
Yeah, thanks. All right, forgot to ask Bill. Bill, where are you from, by the way? Maybe he's from, he almost sounds like he's got a Chicago accent. All right, here is it's actually break time right here. Is a little more Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson classic song, Luckenbach, Texas. Kelly O'Connor, 6:45, and today is the 23rd of March, and it's about 50 degrees out there. We'll be right back.
To the basics of love.
Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
Kelly, Bill, I forgot to mention one other thing.
Yeah.
How come you're not talking about Obama's grand idea to have mandatory voting?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I mentioned that, but I'll have to bring it up again. Where are you from?
Yeah,
where'd you come from?
You hit it on the head, Chicago.
Why is it there? It seems to be half the people I meet coming in from out of town are from Chicago.
Because we're all trying to get out of that state before it goes under like Detroit.
That's funny.
And you know what?
Yeah.
That's another thing. Your tax hike here is shades of the kind of crap that went on in Illinois. And they better get their heads out of their you-know-what, or they're going to end up just like Illinois.
Yeah, well, that's true. Well, thanks a lot, Bill. Have a great day.
All right. Bye.
All right, bye. Listen, this is Kelly, 6:48, and I'm going to tell you something that you know, but you find it out all the time, but you've got to return to it, and that is your gut is more oftentimes right than it is wrong. And if your gut tells you that having a moderate candidate in the presidential election is a disaster because it's been a disaster because it doesn't really represent the hopes and aspirations of the party, you're right. And you don't have to listen to the talking heads to understand that. You just analyze it a little bit. What has it been about these people that are on or that are in the middle of the party is that, you know, there is no such thing as the middle. The middle is a place that doesn't really exist. You've got the conservative ideals, and then you've got the liberal ideals for how things should be run and what's true, what's not, what's important, what money has to be put into and what needs to be supported and what, on the other hand, what needs to be fought against. But if you push those two things together, you get something in the middle. But it's kind of an aberration. It's a chimera, which is a combination of different animals, and an animal made up of a whole bunch of different animals is a monster. So, Rob is texting me, Palin, Palin, Palin. I feel your Palin there. You've got to have someone that represents some strain of pure thought. Nobody's a pure person, but somebody who represents, the thing about Reagan was he had his ideals. He was enthusiastic about them. And you need somebody like that because they'll stick to their guns and fight for what's important to them. You get somebody in the middle. What do they really believe in? What do they support? To me, the problem with George W. Bush was the same thing that was the problem with, George Jr. is the same thing that was wrong with George Sr. and probably Jeb, is they're not enthusiastic about conservatism because they're not conservatives. And at some point you would have to say maybe they don't understand it. When George Sr. gets in, he's running for office and said no new taxes, and then he turns around and supports taxes. To me, that's a fundamental mistake. Number one, don't mislead people. But number two, don't turn your back on probably the most kind of poignant or important idea to conservatives, which is holding back the reign of big government. And one of the ways you do that is by holding back taxes. And it is not pie in the sky. It is a difference of philosophy. Anyway, here's a little bit of Mark Levin on this Jeb Bush issue.
Pops the next great Republican leader. A Bush. Imagine that. It seems to me every one of George H.W. Bush's offspring should have a shot at the presidency. I mean, after all, why not? There's nobody in the wings. Forget about conservatives like Cruz or Pence or whatever, or Walker, Jindal, you name them. Forget it. We need another Bush. Why? Because there's so many of them. Why not? These people don't even have self-restraint to realize how absurd it would be to have so many quote-unquote presidents from the same family. George Washington had enough humility. He could have been king. He could have been president his entire life. He said two terms, that's it.
All right, that is the reaction of Levin on that, and here's a little bit of Laura Ingraham.
Who believes he can win by bypassing the people who listen to this show or others in talk.
All right, so a little bit of a problem there, but getting this thing to play, but we'll be right back. 6:54, Kelly O'Connell. Take a little break here, and we'll be right back and finish up the first hour. 5-2-3-4
radio. I think that says a lot about the candidate. So you can come on the show. I might not agree with you. I'm going to ask you some tough questions. But in the end, if you can't answer these questions, I don't see how you think about the candidate. So you can come on the show. I might not agree with people who listen to this show. We don't need a Republican nominee.
This is Kelly, and I've got this clip here from Laura Ingraham. Just listen to a little bit of it.
We don't need a Republican nominee who believes he can win by bypassing the people who listen to this show or others in talk radio. I think that says a lot about the candidate. So you can come on the show. I might not agree with you. I'm going to ask you some tough questions. But in the end, if you can't answer these questions, I don't see how you think you're going to be all that successful in politics. You just have to be able to answer basic questions. George W. Bush didn't go on talk radio. I mean, a handful of times, maybe. And I don't think the Bushes like answering questions. I think they like pronouncing. I think they like going to forums where they can pronounce. And then I think they like doing the kind of kitschy interviews of, that you do it for fun, the fun kind of interviews. But you don't get the sense they like being questioned all that much. They get very prickly when they're questioned. And I saw that firsthand. Washington Post today.
All right. So that's just a little bit of what's going on out in the blogosphere, out in the right side of the media. Nothing more important than talk radio, though, for the conservatives, because that's where we traditionally have been able to get our voice heard. And the upshot is that people are not happy with what's going on in the candidacy. There's been two failed elections. Both of them were winnable, according to the right. They were lost, and there's been devastation out there to conservative ideas. They want a different candidate now. And more Bush, more of the same, I think most people would agree. Even Progressive, who called last Friday, Mr. Amirabi, admitted that we've had too much Bush. We've gorged on Bush. Here is, finish you up with the Luckenbach, Texas. Kelly O'Connell will come back at the break of the hour at 6:59 on KOBE.
Let's go to Luckenbach, Texas. Between Hank Williams' pain songs, Newberry's train songs, and blue eyes crying in the rain. Out in Luckenbach, Texas, ain't nobody feeling no pain.
Good morning, Kelly here. It is 7:06, and hope you're doing well out there. It's about 50 degrees. It is 7:06 on the 23rd of March, and state news, et cetera, but I want to get back to state and local is that was put together by somebody in D.C., and it was called V-15. That was the Israeli part of it, and then it was also called the one movement. Anyway, whatever it was money from the government that went from the United States over to Israeli election to influence, and that it did have an impact, and it was really kind of cutting into the ads that they were running were really cutting into Bibi Netanyahu's race. And then when he came over and gave the speech in America, his numbers started to go back up again. And then this V15 group started running more ads. And so I think it was $350,000. But, you know, remember that, you know, the Israel is not nearly as large as the United States. So $350,000 would make a lot more of an impact there than it would here. But I mean, the whole idea, they say that Obama made up his mind that he was going to get Benjamin Netanyahu out of office because, number one, he was personally embarrassing him, and number two, because he was getting in the way of Iran. And I think that I've tried to figure out where the president is coming from. I think that one of the things that he's looking for, in a weird way, I'm just kind of putting the pieces together in my mind right now, but in a weird way, Obama is not that different from Bush. Obama thinks that he's going to be involved in the Middle East and he's going to solve the problems over there. He's going to solve the problems by pushing back Israel, who he sees as overly aggressive, and he's going to get the Iranians to buy into this nuclear arms pact that will limit their ambitions and aggressions. And in doing that, he's going to kind of live up to his Nobel Prize and everything. That's my impression. So I think that's why he's pushing it back. I mean, obviously, Obama has some sort of ambition to be seen as a great president. Now, according to what he had said before, he had already considered himself to be the fourth greatest president. And so he's got something that he's fighting for. A lot of people in America think that, you know, a lot of especially American conservatives think that he's just trying to destroy the country. But if you gave him the benefit of the doubt and said there is something, if he's fighting for something positive, what would it be? I think that it would be to solve the riddle of, you know, 2,000 years, 2,500, 3,000 years of fighting in the Middle East between the you would historically call, I guess, the Philistines, the Palestinian movement, the Arab movement, and against the president. So anyway, so that's what I think he's doing. He's trying to, he's probably really gotten sick of Netanyahu, who I would assume, according to Obama, should play the good soldier and go along with what America wants, because if it wasn't for America, there would be no, you know, there would be no Israel. There would be no number one supporter of Israel. We have enormously helped them out.
We give them stuff that we don't give to other countries. And I'm sure that Obama would appreciate it if Bibi Netanyahu would just kind of play along. Instead, he's become a real thorn in his side. Now, from Netanyahu's perspective, they're fighting for, ultimately, they're fighting for survival. And they don't, you know, really appreciate how Obama is kind of, you know, this is kind of a hobby for Obama. For them, it's life and death. And Netanyahu is taking it personally that the president is telling him things like, if you go and try to bomb Iran, we're gonna shoot you down. Now, would Obama have shot him down? Who knows? I mean, I cannot imagine him taking a move like that. But you'd have to see it from the Netanyahu's perspective as an extraordinary threat from their number one ally. So I think what Obama is trying to do, to give him the benefit of the doubt, I believe he is trying to cinch his legs. He's trying to solve the problems over in the Middle East, which arguably I think anybody could say it seems like it's worse over there than it was when he started. I'm sure that they would say that there were forces that were at work that were much larger than any one country could hold back, you know. But that Obama, this is what I think. You know, you should give everybody the benefit of the doubt in terms of their intentions, at least. I mean, Obama either really wants to destroy America and everything in it, or, best case scenario, he's trying to transition America into something else. And, you know, I think in his mind, he's going to become a great man finally in history by ending the crisis with Iran and getting all these people to kind of cooperate. Now, there was one thing that I noticed here in this story, Politico.com, the story about the problem that the Bushes, and especially now Jeb Bush, has with talk radio. Here's a quote out of here. Talk radio is a lot more than Rush Limbaugh, said Brett Bozell, who runs this far-right, very influential group. And Brett Bozell, talk radio is several Rush Limbaughs, but in every media market, virtually every media market in America, there is what we call mini Limbaughs, the local host who dominates. And so I thought that was kind of interesting because, I mean, we do think about Rush Limbaugh's impact and other giant players like Sean Hannity, but I think it's on local radio that you hear what people believe. Maybe even you hear from the listeners in an even purer form than you do on the national, on these national shows. And I think that, I don't know, in some sense, that's kind of the key, you know, this grassroots stuff, because it's from the grassroots that movements start. I mean, it's kind of, you can call for a national movement if you're Rush Limbaugh or whatever, but to direct it, to create it, it's got to come out of the grassroots somewhere, like the Tea Party, right? Okay, so anyway, we're going to come back and talk a little bit of local stuff, but here is Waylon Jennings. Are you sure Hank done it this way? This is the outlaw movement we're looking at this week, the movement of guys that came out of Nashville and went over to Austin and started a new country that was a little more raw and a little less cosmopolitan or country-politan, whatever they call it. 715 Kelly O'Connell Show, 523-1450 to call in. It is about 50 degrees outside on March the 23rd. KOBE, will be right back. Here's Kelly and 718. This is interesting. Los Altos Ranch Market, formerly Pro's Ranch Market, on 320 East Wyatt Drive at El Paseo Road, is closing after 4 years. And this is from the Sun News. A liquidation sale is underway. The store will remain open until the stock is gone. The store will be open from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. until the doors close for good. And exact reasons for the closure have not been announced, but a lack of business may be the driving force. And they tried to make the store successful, but it is... That's crazy. I thought that place was going to be so successful, given the you know, the focus on the Hispanic community and the company that owned Pro's Ranch bought the entire El Paseo Plaza in 2008 and began renovating it. And you know, I met those guys. I tried to get them to come over on the store, and. Or, pardon me, try to get them to come over on the radio and make an announcement about it, and they never had time. The cost of remodeling the building and opening the store was said to be $5 to $7 million. It was opened as Pro Ranch in 2011 and sold in 2014 to CNG Ranch LLC. Wow, that's... So anyway, there goes Pro Ranch. I wonder if it was in a different part of the city, if it would have done better. I wonder if it was the city was not big enough for that kind of a thing. I mean, it's pretty interesting. All right, here's a little bit from the legislature about the legislature session that just ended. KOAT.
A lot of lawmakers may be heading home from this year's session with a bad taste in their mouths. During the last-minute push before the close of business, a major bill to pay for important projects all over New Mexico died on the House floor. KAT Action 7 News reporter Kirsten Swanson has more on the very tense final moments of the 2015 session.
And I will respectfully not support your amendment.
Tensions were high as the clock ran out at the roundhouse and lawmakers on both sides.
We were just very disappointed.
Went home frustrated.
The Senate failed to pass it.
Lawmakers also left close to $260 million on the table, money that could have had a big impact across New Mexico. The controversial bill took center stage in the House all morning, triggering a political showdown.
You're telling me $22.9 million of that has not been spent yet?
A bill like this one, called the Capital Outlay Bill, comes up every year. It would have funded public works projects across the state, including things like road work, school upgrades, and senior centers. But Republicans and Democrats squabbled over what should have been in the bill and what should be cut. The House passed a revised version with just 18 minutes to go. It ran out of time in the Senate and effectively died on the table. Senate Democrats blasted the House.
If it had gotten here earlier, we were going to take it up to Senate Finance. And we were going to strip those amendments out, and we were going to put it back the way it was originally.
And House Republicans blasted back.
We got a lot of big ticket bills like capital outlay very late in the game, so we were, you know, unable to act on a lot of good pieces of legislation.
With capital outlay and other measures left on the table, will lawmakers have to come back to Santa Fe? We asked Governor Martinez. She says she has no plans of calling a special session. In Santa Fe, Kirsten Swanson, KOAT Action 7.
All right, so also The bill that would have killed daylight savings time was also died. And locally, we've got a dispute, according to the Sun News, over roads that's jeopardizing infrastructure. I'll come back and talk to you about that. They say that a warm Pacific this year could make the state more wet. And there was National Weather Service saying that a rare set of temperature conditions along the West Coast points to rain for central and northern New Mexico. And so it could be the beginning of the end of a five-year drought for us, and could be flash flooding and warming temperatures that would change the nature of the moisture in the state. So that would be good news. Alamogordo woman, two dogs seized after mauling another dog. It was the dogs of Desiree Romaine. And two pit bulls escaped from her yard, and those dogs chased down another pit bull and bit it so badly it had to be put out of its misery. All right, here is a little more Waylon Jennings now. I just got a text, 805-6180. About this, it just hit me after you described the type of country that came out of that group of country that left Nashville for Austin, that I now realize why I like this kind of country, not that kind of country. That's what words do, clarify things for people who don't get it. That's why it's such a crime when politicians, I guess, don't tell the truth. Oh, sometimes these texts come in out of order, obfuscate to their constituents. Politicians should be, like Laura Ingraham says, always ready and open to answering questions truthfully, so we the people get the representation we need. We need clarity. We need to know our reps are working for us. Good point. Good point. I like how you tied that into the outlaw country movement. Here is Waylon Jennings, KOBE 523-1450. We want to thank Ben Rawson and Rawson's Builder Supply for backing the show. And so if you have any needs, windows, doors, that type of thing, get over to Rawson's Builder Supply. And Kelly O'Connell Show, 725. We'll be right back.
Somebody told me when I came to Nashville, son, you finally got it made. Old Hank made it here. We're all sure that you will, but I don't think Hank done it this way. No, I don't think Hank done it this way. Look at
it's Kelly here, and it's 7:30, and I appreciate you listening in to KOBE, Kelly O'Connell Show. All right, the problem with this bill, one of the problems with the bill for the funding, was that instead of taking it out of the general fund, they wanted to pay for the bill with bonds and that type of thing. They had $4 million for the spaceport, and we do have a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Morning, Kelly. Rob.
Hey, what's up?
So early last week, I went over to that supermarket you're talking about on El Paseo.
Pros Ranch.
And, you know, I was looking for some Boston butt, which is like pork shoulder.
Yeah.
And they had what was called picnic, which is the lower portion of that and with a lot less meat for the same price the other grocery stores had their full Boston butt.
Yeah.
And, you know, the store had a cool atmosphere to it. I like that. They have a huge lunch counter area where you can eat your lunch right there yeah. in the store. And they carry stuff that you don't find in another grocery store here. But, you know, probably they're not competitive on their price for some reason.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think maybe they thought that they would get the commitment from the Hispanic community. Hold on one second. This is Kelly. I'll be right back. Yeah, so anyway, and I kind of wonder if they put $5 to $7 million into renovating that shop and buying the land and everything, the building, maybe the note was too expensive to keep the prices down.
There's only one other store occupied to the north of the grocery store in that whole section there, and it's a clothing store. So yeah, if they're having to pay on all of that building and not renting it out.
Well, wait a minute.
That's probably hurting them.
They've got the Vietnamese restaurant. They've also got a laundromat.
No, that's to the south. I'm talking north of the grocery store.
Yeah, absolutely. That's true. Yeah, and they've never rented those buildings out. I was kind of curious about that.
There was a Godfather, or not Godfather's, a, what's the little Roman guy they have, the pizza chain?
Little Caesars?
Yeah, they had one of those in the corner of that shopping center forever, and it really surprised me one time when I noticed that it was gone that had been there for like 20 years.
Yeah. All right, Rob, anything else? I got another call.
Have a great morning.
Thanks to you, too. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, Kelly. This is Jed.
Hey, what's going on, Jed?
I'd just like to pile on what your previous caller said. Yeah, over there at former Pros, later Los Altos, had some of the highest prices in town on your canned goods and your cereals. And then the meat and vegetable section was lacking. I mean, they sold the highest fat content, 30% fat hamburger that was sold in town. And then the fruit, I mean, like they'd advertise a pack of strawberries for a dollar or something like that, but then you go and about half the packages would have mold on the bottom. The apples would be brown in the center. I mean, it was all second tier stuff. And then you talk about that lunch counter they had. You walk in there, the smell of lard did knock you over. Most of the places in Las Cruces, you know, even though we're a Mexican food center of probably the world, you know, they just don't use a lot of lard anymore. So I think it was just a failure of Pros to take the pulse of the community and what we like specifically here.
Well, I talked to one of those guys. I went over there when it was opening to try to get him to come on the show and announce the grand opening and everything. And the guy told me, I went over there before they opened. I was trying to figure out what's going on. And they're out of Arizona, and they had opened up a number of those Pros Ranch around the West. But I think that the debt the company was carrying got too big.
That may be true. That may be true. I don't know why Jewel Osco and Smith's failed at that same location, probably Walmart. But it's kind of a shame. I did enjoy some of the things over there.
Yeah,
that's just what I wanted to say.
Okay, thanks a lot. Have a good day. Folks, 7:34 here. Let's take another break here. I'll come back and have a little more reflection on these people that are running. But I just kind of makes you wonder. Well, I'm sad to see that market shut down, by the way, because I thought it had, like Jed said, I thought it had a good idea. The way it was done, though, was it wasn't really as good as it could have been because of the prices. And I didn't know the fat content was up. I've never really bought anything over there like that, but it was kind of a cool place to go and to check things out. Be right back. Here's a little more Waylon Jennings, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, the Outlaw Country Movement, and 805-6180 to text in. Hey, it's Kelly here. It's 7:38, and got some various stories here for you. Well, I mean, you know, people know that there's some dissatisfaction with this idea that we've got an oligarchy, which is kind of an oligarchy is a leadership, I guess, by a small group of people, as opposed to a democratic republic in which a lot more people would be involved. Some various stories for you. Evangelicals aim to mobilize an army for Republicans in 2016. And this is from David Lane, founder of the American Renewal Project. And he is, I guess, he kind of makes you think about this moral majority. Lane was a one-time Bible salesman, used to be a wild man. And he says we need to put an army of conservatives together to fight for things that are important. Now, if you consider what's happened over the last, say, 10 years, 15 years, and I would say to a large extent, the left doesn't realize this, but I think a lot of people were disappointed on the right by George W. Bush. They felt like the spending that he was doing was out of hand. They were not comfortable with these wars that he got involved with, although they may not have said it to other people. They wouldn't admit it to the opposition. There was some dissatisfaction with the war machine that was ramped up under Bush. Bearing in mind the issue was kind of forced on him by 9/11, in retrospect, most people would probably say getting involved in Iraq was a mistake, especially now that we've kind of gave up on the country and it was taken over by other forces, and now we've got ISIS over there. But Lane said, I'd stay drunk all night and sell Bibles all day. And drugs, wine, women, and song. But he eventually got saved through the very Bibles that he was selling. And so he knows about sales. He knows about, has become educated on politics, and he wants a national army. Now, Republican or Christian army, the strong argument for that is that there are a lot of Christians in this country who feel like they're disenfranchised, that they're not part of the process, that nobody cares about their opinion, even though it's the majority of people in the country, the vast majority, 70% or so, would say that they're Christian, that their vote is either taken for granted or ignored, while all of these things kind of fight out their way in the secular atmosphere, and that they're sick of getting taken for granted. So, and if you're going to have somebody come in and do controversial things, and it's going to degenerate the country, like Obama, like they would criticize Obama, then why not push back? I mean, if the president and his group of people are ultra secularists, or they are on the one hand secular, but when they do get involved with religion, it tends to be Islam, then why not push back with Christianity? Makes sense to me, you know, 523-1450. You can't argue that religion shouldn't have any influence on life in America, on the government, on the one hand, and on the other hand, give special deference to Islam, especially when an enormous number of the wars and the people killed around the world for, the last 50 years have been involved in wars where Islam is the kind of the spark, you know. All right, here is a few stories for you. Netanyahu rounds up majority needed to govern. Pollster says Obama roll in election larger than reported in Israel. U.S. beefs up military presence in Gulf ahead of Iran deal. Honduras soldiers are being sent to protect the lost city from drug cartels. Small town America is struggling to cope with waves of new immigrants. There are portions of America that are getting revolutionized by influxes of immigrants and to a large extent illegal immigrants. And this is one issue where Christians are going to stand up and say, why should we have to change our beliefs and our way of doing things? A wave of foreigners have come in who want to be here because America is such a great place, but don't want to make any concessions. They don't want to go through the proper channels. They don't want to educate themselves about America. They don't want to do things our way. And many of these people would have come out of countries with failed governments to begin with, so they might not even understand how government is supposed to work or could work. 523-1450. And the shelters in America are preparing for another surge. Illegals are skipping deportation hearings, and the number of people skipping deportation hearings has increased 153%. Somali students stage walkout from Minnesota school, and ISIS is calling on its backers to kill 100 military personnel and has released addresses of people in the military to kill. The Marines are urging vigilance, and Australia has become a hotbed of recruiting, et cetera, et cetera. All right, here's a little more Waylon Jennings, and we'll be right back. 523-1450 to call in. Kelly O'Connell Show on KOBE.
10 years on the road, picking think till they do it this way.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Hi, Kelly. Ben Rawson was talking about a meeting or something tomorrow morning at 9.
Hey, hold on a second. I couldn't hear the first thing you said.
Ben Rawson is talking about a meeting tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.?
Yeah.
What is the location?
I think it's down at the county building. But let me call him and see if he can call on the show, okay?
Very good. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye. Kelly here, and I've got another call here, and thanks for calling in the Kelly O'Connell Show. Hope you're having a good morning. Who's this?
Kelly, it's Mike.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, Kelly, I just wonder, what happens to these illegals when they miss their probation hearings?
What do you mean? They nothing.
There's no consequences for missing.
There's a consequence, but, I mean, the upshot is that they're just going to reschedule it. I mean, I don't know exactly what the law says, but the problem is you've got the law on the ground changing so that, you've got
so
the law
like Obama
on the ground
says, by hook or by crook, he's going to get his progressive agenda through.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's
so dysfunctional, the whole thing. I mean, they flood the country with illegals, and then they don't show up for probation hearings, and there's no consequences from not showing up. I mean, there's no law. It's total lawlessness.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that...
I mean, our taxpayer money is going towards all this thing. I mean, they're just flooding our court.
Hold on a second there, Mike. Let me just...
Our taxpayer money is going... Huh?
The upshot is that I think that one of the things that the Obama administration is going to stand for in the future is kind of an attack against the Constitution as the idea of the rule of law. I think we've become less of a rule of law country. We've become more kind of a will of the sovereign or the opinion of the Caesar or whatever, you know, and it's kind of sad.
I don't let anyone tell me what to do, and I'm not going to let some Obama tell me what to do. I mean, this is ridiculous. You got some lawless guy in office telling people what to do. It's ridiculous.
I don't let anybody tell me what to do. It's not a question of what you're doing. It's a question of what the government is doing.
Well, the government's not going to tell me what to do either.
All right. So, Mike, anything else?
Well, I mean, it just depends, Kelly. Are we supposed to fear our government, or is the government supposed to fear us?
Well, I mean... That's a question for each person to answer, but I don't see the government really kind of standing back.
When the people fear the government, it's called tyranny, isn't it? Tyranny, rather.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, but we got to do so. Here's the problem, and I call out any of the conservatives listening. The problem is that we have not taken part in government like we could have, and then we stand, you know. I mean, there's a lot of Christians out there who think that they're too good to be involved in government. They have a theology that says you shouldn't do anything in the government because it's secular, it's worldly, and then they can't believe it when the government starts passing laws that are inimical to Christianity or to religion. I mean, I'm absolutely astounded by that because this form of government came out of the church. Our form of government was developed over centuries from from the Presbyterians and all of these other groups. How can you possibly then say that we're not supposed to be involved in government?
Well, you know, part of the problem is this: these churches, these 501(c)s, that the government tells them what to preach, and then they preach this Romans 13 that says that you're supposed to submit to the government.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, the people did that in Germany with Hitler, you know? I mean, they just, you know, yeah. Hitler told them what to do, and you saw what happened, you know? I mean, a bunch of sheep, you know? I mean, he's a bunch of sheeple.
Yep, I agree.
He's told what to do.
I agree. Mike, anything else?
Well, I think the slaves, maybe people are just a bunch of slaves. I don't know. I can't. Maybe they like to be told what to do.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for the call. Have a good day. All right, folks. So anyway, so if you're a Christian and you think that
God doesn't want you to be involved in the government, and that you know, a good Christian, you know, that it's politics or Christianity, that is not really what the Bible teaches to begin with. But how do you explain that the structure of the government that we have comes out of the church? And I'll just throw out one thing there in case you're Hammurabi and you're totally opposed to these ideas. There was a battle in the 12th century over the real Pope, and but in the Catholic Church, it was called the conciliar crisis. And they had who they thought was a false pope, so they came up with a doctrine that said the power, the authority, is not in the pope, it's in the church. That idea is then transitioned over to secular government, and we come up with this, what is called popular sovereignty. The people have the power, they loan it to the leaders. Now, I could give you 10 or 20 or 30 or 50 or 100 different examples of stuff like that, but this idea that we've got this, you know, there's a lot of paganism or the progressivism or secularism out there, humanism, that totally rejects the history of the church being involved in politics and is just celebrates the idea that there's no connection between church and state. And then how can we wonder why later, when there's a tyranny or a, I forget how Mike pronounced it, tyranny, come up, you know? I mean, the separation of power is originally found in the Bible. The priest was not supposed to do the government functions. You see, that's why Saul was taken out of power. And when Christ was asked, do you give your money to Caesar or God? And he says, show me a coin, give what is Caesar's to Caesar, give what is God's to God. So, all right, switching gears here a little bit. Sex addict Russell Brand's unexpected porn crusade. This is from the Daily Beast. Russell Brand, who claims to have bedded 2,000 women, is now coming against pornography, saying it is an enormous waste of time. It's a bad thing to do. He says there's a general feeling, isn't there, in your core, if you look at pornography, this isn't what's the best thing for me to do. This isn't the best use of my time. Now, I've always kind of wondered, there's a lot of enthusiasm for porn out there in the left, but especially sometimes in feminism. And I think, you know, you don't know the story of how these women got involved in this. You don't even know if they might be coerced into these, you know, filming these scenes. How can you possibly support that? I don't see how a feminist supports that. But anyway, from Vox, I'm looking for sources of far to the left to get some article titles here. Marco Rubio and Cory Booker have a plan to make your Wi-Fi faster. Vox was put together by, the guy that used to be at Washington Post. Martin O'Malley is running the campaign people want from Elizabeth Warren, which means that Martin O'Malley is pretty far to the left. Can Canadian-born Ted Cruz run for president? And the answer is yes. All right, here is something. Oh, and by the way, speaking of Ted Cruz, here is the first ad that he released. Check this out, you may not believe it.
La historia de Ted Cruz es como la historia de muchas familias estadounidenses. Hijo de un inmigrante cubano, Cruz fue el primer hispano en servir como asistente jurídico del presidente de la Corte Suprema y senador federal por el estado de Texas.
His first ad is in Spanish, and there is somebody who is operative for the left, on the left side, Democratic person who said that our blood is running cold because this guy could really stir up the base. All right, here is six things that science can tell us about roadkill, and this is an article from Vox. It's actually pretty interesting. Number one, roadkill has been a fact of life for centuries. Ever since the horse-drawn carriage, trains, and other vehicles started, they've been killing animals. Two, everywhere there are cars, there is a ton of roadkill. Nobody really knows how often animals are killed by cars in the U.S., but one thing's clear, it happens a lot. There are about 253,000 reported animal vehicle accidents per year that would do enough to damage a car. State Farm estimated last year 1.2 million deer were run over by cars. A rough estimate of how many vertebrates are killed per year, 365 million, more than the population of America. One every 11.5 seconds. Three, scientists use roadkill to track invasive species. Four, some people intentionally drive over animals. Most of us swerve not to hit animals. Others swerve to hit them. In one Canadian study, scientists put a fake snake, a fake turtle, or a piece of garbage, say a styrofoam cup, on the highway and found that fake animals got hit a disproportionate amount of time. That's crazy. Leading the scientists to calculate that 2.7% of the drivers were intentionally hitting them. The same trend has been seen in Brazil and Australia. Five, road salt and roadkill can lure animals onto the road and cause more roadkill. Fences alone cannot protect animals. All right, that's Blog Talk Radio. If you want to listen to the show, we'll take you out here with